This podcast is sponsored by ebookit.com, self-publishing solutions for the independent author and small press. Visit us today at ebookit.com.
Welcome to the Toastmasters Podcast, the official podcast of Toastmasters International. Hello, everybody. This is Greg Gazin.
And I'm Ryan Levesque.
I know in our podcast, we talk about communication and leadership. We talk a lot about speaking, but this topic will be regarding a lot of speaking. Who do we have on tap today, Ryan?
Today, we have a guest named Franco Scanga. On Saturday, April 30th of 2016, Franco Scanga attempted to break the world record for the most speeches in 24 hours in support of the Canadian Cancer Society. The current Guinness World Record was 21 speeches in 24 hours, and Franco's goal was to deliver 23 different speeches at over 23 locations to over 23 audiences in less than 24 hours. And he also set out to raise $16,000 Canadian dollars for the Canadian Cancer Society in the process. Franco Scanga, welcome to the Toastmasters podcast.
Welcome.
Great, thank you. I'm happy to be here.
So, Franco, I understand you've received some news from the Guinness World Record Organization, an official response to your challenge. What's the word? What did you hear?
Well, recently I received in the mail my official certificate, my Guinness World Record certificate, verifying and certifying that I officially broke the Guinness World Record for most speeches in 24 hours, which was 23 speeches.
Congratulations. That's amazing.
Thank you.
And how did you make out on the fundraising end of things?
Well, the goal, as you mentioned, was to raise $16,000 Canadian for the Canadian Cancer Society. We surpassed that by raising $17,800 Canadian, which is about equates to $13,000 US. So it's a win-win all around for this event.
Now, this wasn't just about raising money and it wasn't just about breaking the record. What was it that made you decide to undertake this particular challenge?
Well, back in November of 2014, my father was faced with cancer for the second time. And as any of us know that have loved ones faced with this disease, a number of emotions are colliding. And you want to do your best to support your loved one. At the time, I had been in Toastmasters for about a year, and I had heard about this statistic we often hear at Toastmasters, right? The number one fear of people is public speaking, second to death. Well, when you have a loved one faced with this scenario, you know, your perspective changes a little bit. And I'd always heard about people undertaking the so-called fearless challenges for the Canadian Cancer Society. And what those are is someone taking on their most dreaded fear, facing it and raising money for the Canadian Cancer Society. So that's what came to mind when I wanted to support my father. As well, I had this thought, the statistic that says the number one fear for most people is public speaking. So I thought, what do most people do? I'm going to Google how many speeches can I do in a day. I did that and I found the Guinness World Record, most speeches in 24 hours at 21. And I thought, wow, that looks impossible. I'm not a professional speaker. I'm part of Toastmasters. That seems like the perfect challenge, the perfect fearless challenge I'm going to take on for my dad and for the Canadian Cancer Society. And that's what I ended up planning for, taking on and ultimately achieving.
I know when you undertake a challenge like this, especially for the Guinness World Record, there are certain parameters to the challenge. In other words, you can't just give 25 one-minute speeches and say, hey, I'm the new winner. So can you talk about what some of those parameters, some of those guidelines were that you had to work within in order to officially break the record?
Well, there are a number of really strict guidelines that Guinness puts around this particular world record, as they do for other world records. For this one in particular, there was guidelines around speeches, locations, and audiences. So speeches each had to be a minimum of 10 minutes in length. Each speech had to be different and unique, and they had to be, quote, spontaneous, meaning that I couldn't stand up and read from a script to the audience. It had to be off the cuff. The locations all had to be different. They all had to be in buildings or locations that normally have public meetings where speeches are held, and they had to be accessible by the public. The audiences had to have a minimum of 10 people per speech. They all had to be unique, so you couldn't have audience members attending one speech and then signing up for another one. And of course, we had official witnesses for each one of the speeches to make sure that all of these guidelines were adhered to, including the timing of the speech, the members of the audience, and the official witnesses, as I said, that document what happened at each speech.
We certainly want to hear about the kinds of speeches, but as you're speaking, I'm curious, how are you able to organize and coordinate all of that? Did you need to get any licenses, or did you need to just make arrangements for places? How did that work?
Well, I had to really pitch the event to various groups and organizations throughout the Durham region, and incidentally is where I live and where the event would take place. And this is where the Toastmasters really helped out. There's this one dreaded part of Toastmasters for me that I know, Ryan, you talked before, is the table topics. It's easy for me to go to a club or organization and say, here's what I want to do. I'm hoping you could be a host for one of the speeches. But it's after the presentation, when you're speaking to all of the various members of the audience off the cuff, where my table topics really helped out a lot, which is one that I didn't really expect to apply to this event, but it definitely helped me out. So all of that required pre-planning, pre-meeting with a lot of the organizations, as I said. And it also helped in really getting an idea of where I will be speaking. You know, as in Toastmasters, if you can attend the location that in which you will be speaking, it helps when you want to prepare for the speech and visualize where you'll be speaking. But really required a lot of logistics and speaking to a lot of different groups leading up to the event. It's about a year and a half in planning.
Durham is about, what, 40 miles outside of Toronto, roughly, 60 kilometers?
Yeah, so it's about that, yeah. And it's a regional municipality, which consists of a number of municipalities and towns within it.
So what kind of speeches did you give, Franco, and how did you go about preparing 23 different speeches? What did that process look like of preparation and speech writing?
I really wanted to begin with the overall structure for the speeches. The content for the speeches really didn't, I didn't start writing the speeches till about, you know, 4 or 5 months before the event. I really wanted to make sure I had the structure down so that I could have a consistent approach for each individual audience and speech. And so I put together a structure that allowed me to fill in those speeches with content that I would fill in later on. And I'll get to the content in a second. I really wanted to talk about the structure of that. So I developed a message delivery methodology. Really what that means is, you know, when you're brainstorming a speech, you know, how do you begin to think about what you want to talk about, how you want to deliver the message? And so I developed a structure that would allow me to think about, okay, I want to talk to the audience. I want to talk about, you know, how a message applies to the audience, how a message resonates with myself, the speaker, and what is some data or historical reference that really anchors the message for the audience. From there, I developed a speech structure for each of the speeches. You know, we talk about speech preparation, and the traditional format is to have, you know, top to bottom on a piece of paper, or however you're looking at it digitally, introduction, and then your sub points, your supporting points, and your conclusion. And I found out early on in Toastmasters that that format for me doesn't help in recalling speeches. I learned the hard way, unfortunately, standing up in front of the audience and, wait a minute, where am I? So I really didn't want that to happen in this event. And so what I decided to do was to make sure I put a structure together that I could easily recall for each one of the speeches. So I talked about the speech structure, and you're asking, I know, about the content. And so the content, closer to Christmas time in December, and the event was in April, started thinking about, okay, what am I going to talk about for each of the speeches? And it turns out that much of the preparation I had been doing in the year and a half leading up to that point was the content. We talk about that in Toastmasters, about talking about what you know. And I had been overcoming a lot of different challenges, personal fears, public speaking being one of them, to take on this event. So some of the speech topics include, you know, first steps. That was speech number one. What is a spark? Why take on a challenge? And what are the reasons you want to do that? Change, changing your mindset, looking at fear and turning it on its head and really looking at fear in a positive light rather than as an adversary. Persistence. What are some ways that you remain persistent in a challenge in the light of daunting boundaries that you impose mainly on yourself? Comfort zone. I talked about the value of fear. And I also talked about, you know, in some instances, what happened on this day or on that day. All of these topics, I use that same framework. What's it mean to the audience? What does it mean to me? And what is some historical or scientific reference to anchor that message? All of those different messages filtered up to the overall theme of the event, which was overcoming fears and overcoming challenges.
You mentioned you're a Toastmaster. How long have you been a Toastmaster? And which club do you belong to?
I belong to the Lunchtime Talkers in Oshawa, Ontario, Canada. And I have been a Toastmaster since 2014. And I just wanted to mention, at this point, I'm still working through the competent communicator. This is an important point because it goes to show you the power of Toastmasters. Just by being exposed to other speakers in my group and in other clubs, I've gleaned so much information from the club and from Toastmasters as a whole that there is no way I believe that I could have achieved this event without being a Toastmaster. So it goes to show you the power of Toastmasters and the level of education you learn in public speaking.
That's a perfect segue into my next question. I was going to ask you, how did the training specifically help you? You mentioned the people, but was there something specific? Was it the modules? Was it certain elements of different projects? What was it that actually helped you prepare to undertake and complete this challenge?
I think one of the main things I learned in Toastmasters is preparation. The first thing is preparation. I learned early on in Toastmasters, you have to really practice. And it's commonly a cliche, but it's true. You have to prepare not only what your message is going to be, but how are you going to deliver the message? And that's the next point. Delivery of the message was another point that I really, an aspect of Toastmasters that helped me out with this event. I really wanted to make sure that I had the same level of energy and focus on speech number 23 as I had for speech number one. And in Toastmasters, you learn how to ensure you're delivering that message clearly and concisely every time. So I talked a little bit about the structure. Now, the structure I learned by virtue of being in Toastmasters and working out what structure works best for me as a speaker. Practice was the other one. And preparation exercises. You know, one thing that I often found for me that you don't anticipate as being a speaker is the physical aspect of it. A lot of times, you see that with my ums, a lot of times I would use that as fillers, but the physical part of it is remembering to breathe, effective pauses, and so on. And that was critical in this event. With a 10-minute speech, you're having people sit for 10 minutes to listen to a speech you deliver that they've perhaps never met you before. You want to make sure that you are speaking in a non-rushed manner to make sure that you're delivering the message clearly and concisely and delivering on key points with effective pauses and so on. And breathing is a big part of that. And one of the things I've always had to work on, I learned in Toastmasters, is remembering to breathe, not running out of your breath before you get to the end of your sentence. They seem like small components, but you learn those things whether it's through the modules or the exercises in the various roles as a Toastmaster. You're reminded of those three evaluations and so on, and they become ingrained, as they had for me, and they became ingrained into the process and the structure of this event.
I recall my mentor, one of the first things that he said to me was, "Greg, remember to breathe." And I just gave them this stare when I first heard that.
It's true. It's true. And breathing for me in this event was important. It's one component of the speeches, but it was also important in the physical conditioning, which is a whole another component to this event that I had to prepare for as well.
And ironically, there wasn't much breathing room in your schedule, to use that as a metaphor. What I mean by that is, I understand you had to give a speech every half hour. So just to tell me if I'm understanding this right, let's say you have a speech at noon and you finish the speech if it's about 10 minutes at approximately 12:10 in the afternoon. Then you need to thank people graciously, but get out of there quickly because you have only 20 minutes to get to your next location, get yourself settled, and begin your next speech at 12:30. Is that correct?
Yeah, so I gave myself about 8 minute buffers between each speech, but the locations were so close together that it allowed me to travel quickly between one and the other. Now, what that also meant was I had very little time to catch my breath, so to speak, in between speeches. Some locations were further than others, but essentially it was a speech every 30 minutes. There was no gap greater than 30 minutes or less between each speech that I had time for. So it really was 230 minutes of speaking in 12 hours.
And how did both your nerves and your energy level vary throughout the day?
As I mentioned, I had prepared for about a year and a half of this before the event, and one of the things that I decided to do early on was to get perspective in preparing for this event from people in many different disciplines and all over the world. So Olympic athletes, doctors, coaches, Toastmasters, professional speakers. So there was a lot of different areas of preparation of this. So the conditioning part was important. I really wanted to make sure that my temperament, because it's an emotional event, we're talking about emotional topics here. They're not, they're, you know, you're being vulnerable. Which is a whole other part of standing up and the fear of standing up in front of an audience. A number of things I did to get ready for that. And one I mentioned was the breathing exercises. One was to develop a strict exercise regiment. And it was strict, meaning something like skip rope, jump rope. I took that from boxers preparing and for their events or their fights. And it's an unorthodox way of preparing, but the way I see it is, when you think about all the elements you prepare for one single speech, I really had to apply those to the extreme. And as I like to say, I supercharged my speech preparation. And this is an example of that. What I did was I would physically train, exercise at home, and then practice the speeches. And simulate my high heart rate and shortness of breath to see what it would be like to simulate what it would be like on the day. And as it turns out, I was literally at some points running from one speech to the other. One, for example, which was a block away, I forgot my notes in one location and had to run back and get them and run back to the other speech. But that preparation of the conditioning part really made a big difference. So I can maintain that energy level from speech number 23 as I did for the speech number one. So exercise, and it's an unorthodox way of doing it, and you should try it because it really made a big difference in feeling like you're preparing for having a really high heart rate and speaking in front of an audience, which you don't ordinarily do. Unless you have that fear kicking in, your heart rate goes up, and oftentimes you're not ready for that, and we know what happens when you're speaking in front of the audience. And your sympathetic nervous kicks in, nervous system kicks in, and you start to forget, you start to sweat, you start to panic. So I prepare specifically for that scenario. How did I know that was going to happen? It happened to me in Toastmasters many times before.
That's really a brilliant idea, I think, of practicing your speech in a situation with an elevated heart rate. I think that's something that a lot of people who deal with anxiety in speaking situations could borrow from and incorporate that into their practice and preparation. I want to ask you, though, Franco, I'm sure you must have learned a tremendous amount from all the time you put into preparing this to actually doing the competition, if I can call it that. But what's one thing that you point to that you think you will carry forward with you for the rest of your life from this experience? One thing that you learned or perspective that you gained?
Wow, there are so many things that I learned from this. The one thing that I learned was how to face fear. I enjoyed public speaking as a kid, then abandoned it for whatever personal barriers or things that have come up since I was a child. And 30 years later, I'm public speaking again. You know, that's why I joined Toastmasters. I think a lot of that is a fear that developed over time for standing up and sharing your ideas with others. And as human beings, you know, that should not be a fear. Should be something we look forward to doing. And so if there's one thing that I took away from the event is to not fear sharing ideas with others and see fear as a teacher to show you your boundaries and to overstep those boundaries and surpass that and share your ideas with the world.
I have to ask this question, Franco. Would you do this again, and are you going to do this again?
You know, I thought about doing it again, but I'm not sure that I will. It hasn't really sunken in yet, to be quite honest with you. So no, I don't see myself doing it in the future. I'm excited to see someone else give it a try and see what happens, see someone else surpass it and overcome their own fears.
It sounds like you made a big difference to a lot of people, and you also made a difference to yourself. You learned a lot from the process.
I did indeed, and one aspect that I didn't consider that was a big benefit was meeting all kinds of wonderful people in the community that came together and were a part of the event and made the event possible.
Franco, can you share with our listeners where they can find out more about both the Canadian Cancer Society and how they can connect with you personally?
Well, sure. You can go to talkforacure.ca. That is the event. That is the event page that talks about the background of the event and all of the various speeches and so on. I have a contact link on that page as well. And I believe there's also a link through to the Canadian Cancer Society from that website. So that's talkforacure.ca.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Franco, for joining us on the show, for sharing your inspirational victory here with the Guinness World Record for the most speeches given in a single day within 24 hours. We really appreciate you coming on the show and wish you the best.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it. And if I could just say one thing, guys, you know, when I was looking at joining Toastmasters and researching it online, I came across the Toastmasters podcast, and listening to all of the interesting guests and topics you had really was a catalyst for me to say, yes, I want to join Toastmasters. And if it wasn't for Toastmasters, I wouldn't have taken on this event and beat the world record. So thank you to you.
Well, thank you very much, Franco. We appreciate that.
Yeah, Franco, and if you could maybe send us certificates from the Guinness World Record Association for being the key players in your victory, we would certainly appreciate that.
Sure, okay, I can do that. No, you know what, it's true. I mean, I really thought it was important for me to share the story with you guys, so thank you for allowing me to do that.
We appreciate that, and no money has changed hands.
Isn't it about time you published that book you've been thinking about? We can help with that. At ebookit.com, we've been providing authors and small presses with ebook publishing services since 2010. Visit us today at ebookit.com and let us know how we can help you.